Some of you know this story, which is one that I rather like, really. But it's about a mother and a small son were going to a different town, different village from the one they lived in. And the little boy was very interested because it was a different place. So he was asking his mum what every place was, you know, this shop there, this place there, the police station, etc., etc. Then he came on a Baptist chapel and he said, "What's that?" And his mum said, "Oh," she said, "well, that's a chapel." And she tried to explain what it meant. She said, that's where God lives." So the little boy then sort of shot off down the alleyway, down the side of the church, round the back, and then came back out the front, eventually to his mother. And he said, "Well, I've looked in all the windows, but I can't see him, but he must be in because his bike's out the back." Now, a rather literal way of looking at things, but it just simply says to me, what are the things that shows where God lives? Or to put it another way, what are the things about us that show that Jesus is actually alive? Because at the end of the day, that's one of the important things about the church, as it were, whether it's a church local or the church universal, it's the body of Christ. It's meant to represent, to demonstrate Jesus. It's a bit of a heavy thing in a sense, isn't it, really, when you think about it? But it's worth thinking about it from the view of this passage, because I think this passage gives us some ideas of what we are to show, and also the fact that we are people who have a certain standing. I was asked to preach on this passage. I gather there's a series going through about sacrifice, and this one is sacrifice, our status. And status is an interesting thing, isn't it? You know, one of the things our society is obsessed with is celebrity, isn't it? You know, 15 minutes of fame by people who, on the whole, you probably wouldn't want to meet again, in some senses. Lovely people, I'm sure they are, but you know what I mean. And it's whether people are flashy or whether it's they have a particular talent or whether it's they can make bigger fuss than anybody else. That somehow is celebrity. But actually what a person really stands for, their real status, their real position, is often something an awful lot more profound than that, much more long-lasting than that. I think the clue in this passage is in verse 14, where Jesus simply says this, "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so. Now, I, your Lord and teacher." Jesus is drawing the disciples' thinking to him in this particular incident. This is a fascinating incident, isn't it? This is the night before Jesus dies. It's the night of the Lord's Supper. They're gathered for a meal around a table, probably reclining because that's how they did it in those days. And they've all come in, and one thing hasn't happened. Because when people came in for a meal into a place of hospitality, this was a rather hot, dusty place that they lived in, you'll appreciate, wearing sandals, all that sort of thing. And you'd come in, you'd probably be a bit on the mucky side around the feet department. And so it was usual for a host, or for whoever was arranging the thing, to have someone standing by to wash people's feet there. Now, this is not a terribly pleasant thing. I don't know about your feet, but my feet are not the most attractive part of me. And I'll say nothing about the odour that occasionally comes from them after a hard day's walking or something of that. But it's not a fun thing, generally speaking. So the person who washed the disciple, who washed the feet of whoever was coming in, would not be a very important person. You know, they would be a servant, they would be someone that did all the menial stuff and all the unimportant stuff. And really and truly, on the whole, you didn't want to be that sort of person. You know, generally speaking, humanly speaking. On this occasion, nobody washed anybody's feet. Nobody had taken that place or done that particular thing. And we know why, because the disciples were arguing about who was really the most important person amongst them. That's what they had been arguing about on that night. So it wasn't just Judas Iscariot who was engaged in wrong things, frankly, was it? But all of them were. And so Jesus, the Lord, the teacher, the really important one, takes off his coat, gets a towel and a bowl, he washes their feet. I, your Lord and teacher, wash their feet. What was that actually all about? I want to suggest the first thing it was about was it was actually about being engaged with and knowing Jesus truly as he really is. You remember when Peter said, no, you can't wash my feet. Jesus said, if I don't wash your feet, you have no part in me. You're not related to me. Unless you let me touch you in this way, in a sense, you don't really know me. There's something vitally basic about what was going on here. Jesus said, you've got to let me wash your feet. You've got to let me know. You've got to know I am serving you. You've got to relate to me. You've got to know me for this to mean anything at all. Peter, of course, gets a bit literally minded and says, oh, wash all of me. And Jesus says, oh, come on, that's not quite the point. Peter, think a bit more. This is about you and me being together, knowing one another. It's about me washing you, serving you. It's about you setting aside all your understandings of who's top and bottom and middle and letting me be the one who enters and is involved in your life. And then, of course, actually, although I've just said Peter, you know, getting very literal, but then he did let Jesus wash his feet. There was a responsiveness, an engagement with Jesus, that though it was surprising, though they couldn't see what it was all about at the time, was vitally important in linking them with Jesus. So know me, Jesus is saying to them in this act. But he's also saying, and know yourself. Know who you really are meant to be. Know your status, if you like. And when we look at that, well, it's probably not quite what they expected. Because that's the foot washing. If I, your Lord and Master, wash your feet, you should wash one another's feet. Now, actually, there have been some branches of the Christian faith that have taken that quite literally. And it's part of a communion service. I did wonder about that today, but thought that maybe that might be a step too far, in a sense, in terms of originality and all the rest of it. But what was Jesus actually meaning by this? Remember, the foot washer was the one at the bottom of the pile, the one who served other people, probably being unnoticed for that service. In other words, Jesus is saying, you're a servant, now be one. Our task, my task, your task, is not to be the boss, not to be on top, but to actually follow Jesus by being a servant of those around us. And actually, in the New Testament, written in Greek, it's a little bit harder than that, because the word that's used is not just a word that means servant, it actually means slave. So there is a sense in which Jesus is challenging them to recognize themselves as utterly dependent on him, the master, and doing simply his will. Following him by caring, by looking after, by doing the menial, by not looking to be at the top, by not wanting to have my way or get my ideas put forward or whatever, but to actually be the servant. But he does say something else which I think is worthwhile. Verse 16, he says, I tell you the truth, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now Jesus there is also saying to them, there is a sense in which you're not just a servant, but you are sent. You're not just, as it were, the person who is around to help. You are sent with an important message, with something important to say. Again, the word that Jesus uses there is the word that we get the word apostle from. We sometimes refer to the disciples as the 12 apostles. It simply means people who were sent as ambassadors, in a way, for Jesus, to represent him, to tell people about him, and to let people know the reality of what he was, who he is, what he wants them to do. This sort of service, which cares completely and deeply, but is willing also to say to people, things need to be different. This is the power of the gospel, you know. This is what, down through the ages of the church's history, has actually been transforming as people have grasped their status as those of servants who are sent as apostles. They've been able to say and to do things that have literally transformed the world in a variety of ways. The first hospital was invented by a Christian person acting this out. If you look at the history of the church, you'll see there have been times when people have been amazed because the service that's been carried out has been completely beyond what's been expected. There was once, you know, in the church became a very dominant force in the early years of the Roman Empire, you know, 3rd, 4th century and all that. There was actually a Roman emperor who tried to turn it all back again. He was, in a very friendly fashion, called Julian the Apostate, who wanted everybody to become pagan again. But it didn't work. And it's recorded that Julian said the reason it didn't work was because these Christians not only care for their own people, they care for ours as well. In other words, the words of love, the message of love, the challenge of love was acted out in God's people in such a way that the words were authenticated and made real by the actions of God's people. That powerful combination was the thing that again and again and again has been the moving ahead of the Church of God. You've got somebody from the Salvation Army coming and preaching next week. Well, he'll probably talk about William Booth and the foundation of the Salvation Army. He should do anyway, really, because it's worth hearing about. Because exactly the same thing happened there. And the Salvation Army has continued to recognise, what is it, a hand out to God and a hand down to man, is a phrase they use. In this way, when people, Christian people, seize hold of our status of sent servants, things begin to happen. How can it happen? It's perhaps worth asking. Well, firstly, just some thoughts. This can happen because it's informed by the example of Jesus. I have given you an example. If we want to know how should we be, look at Jesus. Now, I find very often, I don't know about you, I don't think I'm being unduly cynical in this, but I often find that when people want to be like Jesus, they want to be like the Jesus who turns water into wine. They want to be like the Jesus who heals the sick. They want to be like the Jesus who, no, maybe not touch the leper, but heals the leper. They want to be like Jesus in that powerful sense. Jesus actually says, be like me by serving people. Be like me by being a slave. Be like me by taking orders and being sent. Doesn't sit well with modern Western culture, does it, this? That's why I happen to think this is probably the prophetic challenge that Jesus gives to us as Christians today, and particularly in the setting in which we live. Nobody wants to be a servant today. Everyone wants their own way. I have a right to my own way. But what about people who don't? What about people who are left out? What about people who are marginalised? What do we say about that? Should we not be serving rather than grabbing? I wonder whether there would have been a scandal in Parliament about expenses if the attitude had been this attitude of service. I don't think it would have happened, would it, in the first place? Just think what it would be like if all the rulers of all the countries said, instead of getting my way, I want to serve people. I think that would make a profound difference. Well, I think that's an understatement. It would transform and change things, wouldn't it? The example of Jesus is the one we are called to follow. It's a challenge like no other. but it also is what's at the heart of what God is about. Jesus came and took on the form of a slave, Paul says in Philippians, and gave up his life. But it's not just accepting that status. Notice what, there's a profound part of the very first verse in this passage that sometimes I can never quite get past. Having loved his own, it says of Jesus, he now showed them the full extent of his love. And then he washes their feet. The full extent of his love is expressed in service, in care. The full extent of his love was expressed in giving his life, not grasping at the rule of kingship which he had, but actually becoming the most lowly servant so that he might serve. And it was all about love. That's what energized it. That's what gave it warmth. That's what turned it away from cold compassion to warm care. That's what people found in Jesus, a passionate love. A love for all sorts of things. A love for the truth so that he could argue with the Pharisees. A love for individual people so he could touch the unclean. A love for the widow so he could raise the dead. A love that moved him and motivated him from beginning to end, through and through. That's what it was all about. Paul, later in Ephesians, tries to get hold of it. He talks about the height and the length and the depth and the breadth of love. That's four dimensions in a three-dimensional world. Trying to get hold of, trying to communicate how much God has loved us in Jesus. As we are, that we might become more like Jesus. Where we are, that we might live with Jesus. As we are, so that we may be with him into eternity. But it's love that's at God's heart. The service that Jesus encourages us to give is not something we're obliged to do. It's not something that's a duty. It's something that he says, since I loved you, let that love flow. We love, John says, because he first loved us. In other words, it's because God's love's been poured into our hearts by the Holy Spirit that we can allow that love to flow out. Sometimes it seems to get a bit stuck. Sometimes things get in the way. But nevertheless, it's there. And it can flow. Possible helps for that? Well, just notice that it's the disciples Jesus talks to here, not one person, but a community of people. You and I are not meant to do this on our own. We need each other to be servants. We need each other to know what love is about. We need each other to be sent for Jesus. No one's ever been meant to do the Christian life on their own. I think that's one of the great sadnesses, that sometimes we think we have to. No, we need one another to help us, to encourage us, to support us, sometimes to calm us down, sometimes to warm us up, sometimes to correct us, sometimes to celebrate with us when we've discovered something really great, really wonderful. We need one another. And brothers and sisters, I pray that this church, with all of our churches, will know this reality more and more. Again, so often our society is an isolated society, one where people find loneliness because they're all shut away in their rooms, let alone in their houses, in their different rooms. You know, people don't even eat meals together, apparently, in some places these days. We need to be communities, valuing one another because we're valued by Jesus, serving one another because Jesus served us, loving one another because that love is something that's been poured already into our hearts as a disciple, as a follower of Jesus Christ. We need each other, and each other can help each other in this particular way of being the sent servants. That's our status. In the end, it's simply about I, your Lord and teacher, being like Jesus. I suppose that at the end of the day, that truly is what all of us want. And probably all of us feel we fail on every now and again. But that's never the end of it. That's never the end of it. God calls us to keep on keeping on with him, seeking to be like Jesus. Just final things. Think practically about that when you're saying, well, how can that be? Well, think practically. How can you actually be a servant? How can you actually show that love? Think personally too, because it is something each of us has to come to grips with, come to terms with in terms of how we will do these things. But also think corporately. Think corporately. Think as a body. We need to support each other in the work and in the way that we are. I mentioned Great Samford Baptist Church, where they've got ministry and training. You as a community are supporting that happening, enabling that person, that individual in one sense, to grow in the love of Jesus through what you've been giving. But it can boil down to something much more practical and around and about. Who is there around you that you could show this love to? Who is there around you that you may speak of the love of Jesus? And then perhaps ask also the other question. Who around here can help me do that? Who around here can just encourage me or show me a better way or give me a hint about how I might do this, that or the other thing? Because it needs to always be in all of those directions, doesn't it? Jesus to his community, the disciples, says, I've given you an example. Assume this really important status of a servant like me. And then go and be the message as well as the messenger. Go and act and speak. Go and make a difference. See the world, person by person, be transformed.